fans inside the cryogenic oxygen tank had something to do with the loss of AC power. Neither of these tests caused the kind of overvoltage that would have caused the AC power to turn off. So as of today, we still don't have detailed knowledge as to what the problem was. We will, of course, get part of the hardware back with SpaceCat 101, not the cryo tanks and the fans because they're in the service module, but we will get the inverters and the overload overvoltage sensors back, and we'll perform some tests as soon as we get that back to try to tie it down.
Al?
Do you have any idea how long the spacecraft was in this apex down position, and could you state briefly what they had to do to inflate those balloons? Or bags.
It normally takes about somewhere between 7 and 10 minutes to upright to get all three bags inflated. It's probable that it may have come up even quicker than that because two bags can do the job many times.
Is this an automatic thing? They push a button or something to inflate the bags? Or?
Beg your pardon?
How do they inflate the bags?
It's manually initiated.
I think it's worth pointing out. Everybody may not know it, but this spacecraft does have two stable conditions in the water, and it is stable when it's apex down, or it's stable when it's heat shield down. And under various detailed conditions of landing and winds, it is not uncommon for the spacecraft to come to rest in the stable two position, which is apex down, and that's why they've designed into it the uprighting capability so it can be turned over with the heat shield down.
But does that hamper communications when the apex is down?
Yes.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, the antennas are in the water.
Right.
Roy. A lot of nice things have been said this morning. I'd like to compliment that public affairs office for the mission commentary that was very much on the ball all the way through the flight and that gave
us like your steak,
rather keen insight to what was going on. Now, one of the things that was a particular note was the onboard television, which we appreciated very much. It gave us our first look into space proper. And I wonder if this is part of your plan for Apollo 8 and the follow-on missions, and if it is, what can we expect from those television transmissions? I'm not talking production when I say that. I'm looking more at picture quality and at longer range what you expect.
Well, we have a television camera of the same type that Shiroff flew on the stowage list for Apollo 8. I'm not conversant at the moment with the timeline plan for its usage, but it will be used in the Apollo 8 mission, whatever kind of mission it flies. We also have on our stowage list for the lunar module flights a television camera, which is ultimately intended for use on the lunar surface.
Second part of that question actually dealt with. At range, if you do go into deep space, what kind of reception would you expect? Can you get a high bit rate so that you could get a picture back, say, from the vicinity of the moon?
I'd like to refer that or ask if anybody here is more expert on what we can expect than I am.
The ranges that we expect are lunar ranges, assuming that we get the circuit margins and the performance of the spacecraft systems as well as the high-gain antenna. You must have the high-gain antenna on the service module to get TV back to Earth from lunar distance. On the lunar surface, it requires the high-gain antenna on the lunar module or possibly the use of the larger dishes here on Earth than we have. We only have one at Goldstone, as you know, the 210-foot dish, or the use of an erectable antenna. That's probably touch and go. We need to understand better when we get there what the margins are going to be to give you a full picture of what the lunar television will be.
We've got some numbers here on aiming points and splash points, which may be of interest. Aim point, and these are going to be PAO, unofficial numbers, until the data is released. 27 degrees, 38 minutes north, 64 degrees, 10 minutes west. That's the aim point. Splash point, 27 degrees, 32.5 minutes north, 64 degrees, 4 minutes west, which is an 8 nautical mile miss from the aim point. Time of splash, 7:11:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight. Time spacecraft hoisted out of the water, 8:52, and it was held on the crane or the sling for about 7 minutes, and it was put on the deck at 8:59. both Eastern Daylight Time. Another question back there.
Dr. Berry, can we expect some information later on today on the general condition of the astronauts, and in particular what they experienced on their descent in reference to their sinus and ear condition?
Yes, I think we can do that later today. I told Paul, and I think I told some of you yesterday, that we probably wouldn't have any real information about that until later this morning. So sometime early afternoon, we'd be glad to give you a quick summary of where we are. At the moment, I could say that we have received word that we certainly didn't have any ruptured eardrums at any rate.
How will you put out that information?
We'll have it available in the news center. I imagine, Chuck, it'll be at least early this afternoon, don't you think, before you get your phone call through? Well, thank you very much. We hope you didn't...
Can I say something about your numbers, Mr. Haney?
Yes, sir.
I don't agree with your mathematics, number one. And number two, that just because that's where they said it picked, they picked it up, is not necessarily what the miss distance is.
I'm sorry. What I was giving you was an 8 nautical miles from the aiming point. I don't think I said anything about splash. Maybe I did. The second number is a splash estimate. And it's very unofficial. It's completely non-data, unverified.
We think it's less than that.
Thank you very much.